I've been looking at Majima 140. It's I forget the exact name of it, but it's basically it goes through the six elements, and it's a discussion about the this is the sutta where the Buddha is going and he asks if he can stay in somebody's woodshed, and he says yes. There's somebody that's staying there currently though, so he goes in and the Buddha's. He says, "Oh wow, his conduct is very inspiring." He talks to him. He doesn't realize it's the Buddha. And so then he says, "All right, let me teach you the Dhamma." And there are a number of things that he goes into, namely the six elements. And then he talks about equanimity. Well, first it's with after the consciousness element, he goes into equanimity and kind of goes through that stuff. And Bhante Pascal and I were discussing the elements the other day. I'm curious if there's a what would be a more practical way of approaching that in your experience?
Well, it would be basically you have to start with what you have. In other words, like six elements, well, you're not going to be contemplating the fifth or the sixth unless you have discerned the first one. So for somebody, the starting point, the first element is all six elements. The first jhana is all four jhanas. You won't be even correctly being able to think about the second or the third, let alone fourth, if you have not established yourself in the first. It's inconceivable. Even theoretically, you will not be able to grasp it. And same goes for any aspect of contemplation. So in terms of six elements or kasinas and so on, the first one is the direction of all the elements that you can develop. So what is the first most obvious element that you have paired with?
Earth. Just
No,
do it
more
all.
obvious than that. Let's see, earth, earth. Okay, so for me, that's an idea. For you, maybe it's more practical, but generally, what's something that you cannot avoid? Whether you take it as an idea or not, you are paired with it. So,
No, the body.
the body, it's your, basically, it's the direction of the elements, of all of them. So that's how you start to practically contemplate it. Well, in order to start to practically contemplate it, first you need to contain the body. Because for as long as a person is acting out of greed, aversion, or delusion, the body that exists for them, so to speak, the body that they would see when they look at what the body is the body on the level of sense objects, because that's where they're already dependent on. And that's already not the body seen accurately enough. That's not that immediate body you're paired with, that's kind of the body that's now the result of your sensual proliferation and non-restraint. So if a person contains themselves rightly, then that which is left there within that containment approximates the body more accurately, that which the body is in your experience. But fundamentally, in order to then, on top of that, right containment, in order to discern that which body is in your experience rightly, you have to learn how to attend to it indirectly, as we spoke before. Any direct attempt at attending to a body is going to be attending to the sense objects. So it's not going to be the body on the level of sense organs. And so then it's, yeah, learning how to see it peripherally. In other words, whatever you're currently attending, without shifting your attention too much, you want to discern that this body has to be implied in whatever your mind is currently preoccupied with, has to be there as an underlying basis. And if you keep discerning that sufficient amount of times, it will then reveal itself, so to speak. That which you are discerning as implicit is factually implicit. That body is factually there. as a basis of this opinion. It's just that you, again, you overlook it, you overattend it, or you completely ignore it. But attending to it indirectly, in other words, you attend to something else, so to speak, whatever takes your attention, it doesn't matter what you attend, basically. What matters is to recognize that whatever you're attending, the source of this experience as a whole of attending to these floorboards now is the existing body as the sixth sense space here and now. That is that image becomes the implicit base for everything that I'm engaged with. And because things are factually so, then that image will settle in, so to speak. Then you wouldn't have to keep evoking it rightly. It would be seen as, but no, it can't be otherwise. Like, even if I forget about the body and don't have these images of the body being implicit in this experience as a whole, it is so. And that understanding has kind of sunk deeper and sunk through, so to speak. It sort of sunk in. And that's already the contemplation of the element. The element of earth, obviously, in this case, then you can take it further. But even if you don't take it further, this in and of itself is enough. Mindfulness of the body, or non-forgetfulness of the implicit body to the extent necessary, it's enough for the final knowledge, as the Satipatthana Sutta says. And that's exactly it. See, how do you not forget about something? Do you constantly keep it in front of your eyes? No, you keep it at the back of your mind. And that's exactly why Satipatthana of the body is, or any, for that matter, practice of sati, memory. So you're not recollecting the body through directly observing it, you're recollecting it as an image of your world dependent upon the body. So that's already a form of knowledge, like right memory, as we said there before. So just have a memory of your body being there regardless of what you're currently engaging with. Past, present, future, doesn't matter. Don't completely forget that your body has to be there. And practice it on that level. See, that's not really that hard thing to do. What's hard is to contain yourself to stay on that level. Because the tendency of craving, views, of course, and everything else will want to make you overly define it. Yeah, but if I attend to it even harder, feel it for what it is, that's how I'll get to that body. And the more you do it, the further away from the actual body you go.
Because in that case, you're actually overlooking it.
Yeah.
In doing that.
You're over-tightening. You're over-tightening your focus ring, basically. Mm. So it's going to focus on something past the body. It will shift.
And if somebody is recollecting the body in this sense correctly, then why is that right progress? How is that going to uproot fetters? Why is that so?
Anybody else?
Because it is exactly through engaging, engaging in the wholesome conduct or fueling the fetters that you overlook the body.
But no, what he's asking is, so you're not engaging in the conduct and you're recollecting it rightly, why is that resulting in uprooting of the fetters? Why would that result in clearing away of impurities?
Well, because they're mutually exclusive.
But why?
I mean, well, like I said, because whenever you're acting out of the fetters, you are necessarily overlooking the body. And if you are not overlooking the body, it implies that you are not acting in those ways. You can't see the body rightly.
Falling into circularity now. No, the point is, yes, if you don't act out and if you're rightly mindful, you're uprooting the fetters. Question, why? Why is it uprooting the fetters?
Mm.
What is it that when you are correctly recollecting the body, that environment is unsuitable for the persistence of the fetters, for the growth of the fetters? It's actually killing them off. They're fading away for as long as that right environment is maintained internally.
Mm.
Why is that? What is the kind of acute aspect of that.
The right order is basically established and maintained.
Yeah, and so what does the right order mean? What is impossible to do or even conceive when the right order is established?
Ownership.
Exactly. So it's impossible. That body that you see indirectly as an implicit phenomenon that endures regardless of present, past, future engagement, doesn't matter the extent, the intensity of your engagements, that body there, if it's seen, it cannot be owned. It's unownable. It's seen as a thing that's not in your control thoroughly. And that's why if you sustain it sufficiently enough, it would like seep into all the other more acute, engaged, activated aspects of your experience, that they would then become equally unownable. You'll be dispassionate towards them. Now, obviously, that what that extent is, well, that can only be measured in hindsight. That's why you can't have too much of mindfulness. You can't have too much of the right recollection. If you dedicate your whole time, every single day, of just recall every single moment of your waking time to not forgetting the endurance of the body here and now, it cannot result in too much. It cannot result. Obviously, if you try to over-attend to it and overly clarify it, well, that can be too much. But that means you're already not recollecting it rightly. Because that's another question. What is memory? How do you remember things?
You mean
anything.
Just
colloquially, just in the broader sense. Like, what is, like, obviously, you know, putting aside the
like, what's your name and stuff?
Well, no, putting aside the kind of the whole, like, misguided scientific views of how memory is imprinted in your brain and whatnot.
Right.
That's not how it appears for you from your point of view.
Mm.
So, from your point of view, what is a memory? How do you recollect things?
It's an image.
It's an image, yeah. But how do you do that? How do you recollect things?
By unattending.
By unattending?
Whatever,
sure, by unattending,
that's...
like, exactly, by unabsorbing from whatever you might have been absorbed in. So you have to kind of step back, like, that's already what's known as an act of reflection.
Mm.
Step back on your situation, even if you don't necessarily think in terms of your situation. So it's like, oh, remember something, and you could even kind of, oh, remember something from yesterday, give me an event from yesterday. Oh, can you remember something from approximately 10 years ago? And you count the numbers and remember, oh yeah, that was like 10 years ago. So you could selectively even remember various other things.
It's also relational, like memory not being isolated images, but it's sort of like a web, like different memories. So the more
sure.
it's related, the easier it is
yes.
to recollect
yeah,
specific
they,
things.
Yeah, they remind you of other things and so on. But are you really doing the remembering? Is that something that you do?
You is also a
as
memory.
In like, do you like just go and find that memory or?
You
present?
Are a memory. You
sorry.
Are, you are you in inverted commas.
No. I mean colloquially. I'm not like trying to catch on a jargon now. You, but there is no you and stuff like that. No, I mean just you. Do you remember it? How do you remember it?
Well, it's presented.
It's presented.
Yeah.
So presented to what?
To attention.
Yeah.
To, as a possibility.
Yeah,
of
that's
memory.
What you're saying. It's basically, your mind is that which has memories. That mind you're paired with. They exist for it. They're in its own domain. They're not in your domain, so to speak. So everything is already implicit to a degree, like whatever. Now it has sort of the significance of being here. It's shaped by the whole fresh memory of coming here. Deciding to come here for one reason or the other. So it's not like that you're always like entirely encapsulated in the present moment without any kind of connection with these things that were before or things that are implicit as they're going to be after. So that's the whole, like, past is already in your present, implicit, and so is the future. So past is present, future is present, and present is present. That's already how things exist. And from that point of view, you realize images that you have now, immediately, are already on the level of that faculty of memory. The current images, you realize there is no difference. The only difference is like, oh, is it like here now or like 10 minutes ago? But from your point of view, where your mind is, they are images that present itself. That's why, again, if that mind gets expanded, as the sutta described, gets fully abandoned sensuality, purifies itself from all things, becomes very pliable, you would remember far more than 10 years or 10 lifetimes. You could remember a lot more. Because, again, it was the mind and images existing in the same sense that I exist with the eye objects. So the only reason a person might feel like, I need to figure out the workings of it, is if they put themselves in that relationship as I am doing this and this is relevant for me. But you don't need to figure out the relationship. How does the eye see? How does the nose smell? How does the mind think? It's irrelevant. All you need to do is develop this passion towards it. And that's how you would understand how it works. But by wanting to figure it out on that specific overly attending level, you are appropriating it. You're making it yours when it isn't. And that's already a form of constricting your mind. And that constricted mind is more forgetful, basically. Constricted mind will find harder to recollect things rightly or to broaden the context.
So if you're focusing on your breath, you're forgetting the body.
Yeah, well, it's even worse because you would probably be focusing on your breath for some reason or the other, for some implication, and that's already a lack of context due to the wrong view. Yeah, sure, or sensations and so on. But the point is, sati means memory. So right memory. Right memory of the body enduring here is a necessary basis for your experience as a whole. Right memory of the properties of the body enduring here is a necessary basis for your experience as a whole.
The properties of the body being four elements.
No, properties of the... Well, yeah, four elements, but properties of the four elements, meaning the universal characteristics. You did not create it. You have no say in its existence.
Uh-huh.
It's unownable. It's headed to sort of decomposition.
Mm.
All of those things are perpetually implicit in that body being there. And same, anapanasati, memory of your breathing, memory of your acute, present, enduring action of breathing. So you're not accessing it through directly feeling your breathing and watching it. You're accessing it through the image of your mind recollecting it. Indirect.
As a situation that is.
So you realize you could bring yourself through recollecting rightly, through the past, so to speak, through the memories, you could bring yourself to the present moment, here and now. But see it through the memory of the present moment, here and now. Not through you attending the present moment, here and now. That's the difference. That's the indirect way. That's basically the yoniso.
Mm.
That's how you rightly attend to it.
And you could say that this is the most significant memory. That act of breathing. Like in terms of your existence.
Oh yeah, that can have all that. Those implications would then reveal themselves more and more.
Mm.
But even if you don't go like for the further steps of anapanasati, you know, breathing like this and regard your body in this way, regard your mind in that way, just knowingly he breathes out, knowingly he breathes in. Yeah, because again, memory, knowledge, memory is something that you know. Things that you know, do you need to constantly observe them? No. Once you know them, once you understood them, they disappear. And then the mind just recollects them. Because mind and images, that is its domain. That is its feeding ground. That's how it exists. So rather than trying to figure out the relationship between the two, which results in, as I said, appropriation of either or both, develop this passion towards the entire domain by favoring certain images and memories rather than others. So favor those that are rooted in non-greed, non-aversion, that lead to this passion, that lead to disenchantment. So favor the images of asubha. Favor the asubha aspects of the images that you recollect. Favor the dukkha aspects of the images that you recollect. Like, establish them peripherally as that basis. And see, by the way, like now, remember something from like 20 years ago, some event, doesn't matter. obviously you unabsorb yourself from here to remember an image from 20 years ago, but that image from 20 years ago is here. So don't forget it to come back here, but while you remember it,
through it,
see it being here, as it is the stove and the floor and all of us. It is here, factually. Here and now, for you, from your point of view, that memory, doesn't matter how old, how far away it was, it exists here and now in the same sense these other phenomena exist. Because if it doesn't, what did you remember? What are you talking about? How did you even understand my question, my suggestion? You wouldn't have. The super is just the aspect that you can take upon anything. The aspect of the ugly.
Which is unavoidable by the fact that...
Well, that the body is disgusting.
Yeah.
No. If the body were not disgusting, the super would not be possible.
Mm.
But the body is factually disgusting.
Mm.
Orifices, oozing, sweat, hair. I mean, isolate those things outside of the intoxicated context of beautiful, and they're quite disgusting.
Mm.
As the sutta say, own mother would be disgusted with her son, with her child's body if she was to attend to it like that. It's a disgusting thing. He's just been buried under a kind of wrongly, directly attending to only the pleasing aspects. So you develop this image now that proliferated, and all this kind of ugly is not even associated with it, while it's still made out of it.
Because you couldn't be having any perception of beautiful without the body.
Exactly. And the body is factually ugly. So you just have to uncover that. But you won't uncover the ugliness if you directly try to see it. But you will uncover it. See, when I say, like in the early old essays, when I say, like, oh, you find things there already given, or you find the body there already given, well, that means it. You remember it. Like, you find this body already given, existing in this situation. How do you find it? Oh, by remembering it as already being there. So finding things already existing independent of you, it's already a form of memory. Just obviously you have more immediate memories and then you have more distant memories. But either way, memory is real as such. It exists here. And again, if you see that memory of the past event or the present event here and now, as something that's here and now, that is the most acute. Well, that's when mindfulness becomes sampajanya, when it becomes awareness. But the point is to arrive through that acute awareness here and now, not to directly leaping into it with your attention, as people would just think they should do it, but by fortifying that indirect way of seeing something that is here and now without directly looking at it. And you start that by seeing the body as a necessary basis that already endures there, and not forgetting it. Always having a thread of recollection connected to it. So that's why, obviously, as I said, container, sense restraint, containing yourself, containing bodily actions are completely not negotiable. They have to be developed beforehand, but then mentally as well. You have to start containing your mind from, like, just flowing into these abstractions or fantasies or delights and so on, and just confine it to where it is. Oh, yeah, even if I allow this choice of fantasizing about this or that, it will be done so here and now on the base of this body. So let me not forget about the body. And if you don't forget about the body entirely, to that extent you'll be anchored rightly. So even thoughts that present themselves will not take you too far out where you, like, kind of lost the thread, lost the connection. And that's the anchor of memory of the body, body memory. And if you kind of start overthinking what is a memory, or somebody who's listening to this might do that, well, remember anything. Just remember anything from the past, and then, okay, let me now, in the same manner, remember this body here. That's all. So let me not directly attend to the body, let me just remember it, that now, while I'm thinking this, oh, the body is here as a necessary basis. And have that image endure, protect it. Don't distract yourself from it, but obviously things will be coming and going, intensifying and fading away, regardless of what's coming and coming or going away, you try and sustain the necessity of the body being there for either. And then obviously you can apply the same to feelings in the other side of Satipatthanas. Same, the mental Satipatthana. Can you have anything, absolutely anything discernible, anything that you can perceive that does not imply an image? Mental image. Inconceivable. If you say, I see nothing, it's just emptiness. Well, that's an image to that extent. And that's why if you were to practice memory of the body rightly, you would be practicing the memory of the mental images rightly. Memory of the Dhammas correctly. Because, yeah, where are the thoughts? Are they in your head? In your skull? But it's kind of implicit. Like, see, oh, it's not there. So it's kind of... But is it? What's the measure for the insideness of your thoughts? No, it's just an assumption. And to the extent that you assume that your thoughts are in your head, to that extent they're not here and now. They're over there and now.
True.
And the reason why this is important, like, so why are you calling memory? Well, because it clearly shows the different direction from which you have to approach, that indirect way, as I keep saying, you have to see your body indirectly. Because even when people hear that, they will still try to attend to it directly. Just think there is some secret back door, as opposed to, okay, I don't look here, but where do I look? I still try to, like, find it. No, it's on the level of memory of anything else. So if you learn that that's where you have to stop, well, you're closer to doing it rightly. It's less likely you'll be perpetually overdoing it or overly attending it. So remember something from this morning, okay? Now in the same manner, remember something from right now that sort of pertains to your body. Remember your body right now. And have that, okay, I remember that. Okay, leave it there. And try to now protect that image without, what do I do next? Let me attend to how I feel my knees and sensations and so on. Completely unnecessary. And actually, it's detrimental. It takes you away from the right level. And that's that body there. The image of that, the right memory of the body is, as Anupanasatsuta says, it's body among the bodies that you can experience. It stands for that which body is. So it's sufficient for development. Memory of breathing has the memory of the implicit body. And that's enough for fulfilling the Satipatthanas. Because the point of the right recollection, it's not, as I said, to define what that body truly is or to access it. It's just to learn how to see it to the right extent. Not too much, not too little.
And that's the hardest part, basically, regarding practice. Not to forget, well, to find the balance between forgetting and not overattending.
It would depend on people, like different people, different preferences, different views. Some people will be taken in overdoing it, some people will be taken in the direction of underdoing, ignoring it, and so on. So, but like learning the extent that you should try and like recognize and cultivate, and recognizing that it's not about directly attending it or overly defining it, but it's certainly not about just letting it float away and ignoring the whole thing. Like, no, you gotta recollect, but you gotta leave it on the level of that image of memory image, whatever you want to call it. And then eventually you get used to it, you see, oh, that memory, that image is present here and now while I'm talking about the body and the image of it. And that memory endures, in the same sense my sights endure. And that's already a form of establishing mindfulness. And then it doesn't matter what's happening on the level of other senses, that remains unaffected.
But you have to kind of stick with that, bear through that unsatisfaction of wanting to...
Exactly. It's basically your own craving.
You set it up rightly, and then you're like, well...
And then there is this pressure to... next step.
By then not doing that next step, this is actually how you undercut the desire and the grasping. By just letting it be there. Because you cannot do this to the background, basically.
Well, yeah, when it's set up rightly, it's threatening your you and you wanting
it
to...
It feels uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think for most people, it would certainly initially feel uncomfortable. It would feel incomplete.
Yeah.
And if you don't recognize... See, if you still judge whether things are right or not, whether they go in the right direction or not, by whether they feel complete or incomplete, you're judging with your own misguided criteria.
Mm.
But if you learn enough that regardless of how incomplete you might feel, keep it there. If you keep it there sufficiently enough, you will recognize that it's more than complete. It's like what I was saying before, that other similar, like, imagine you know, you're waiting for a bus, but there is no clear mark where the bus stop is. So you stand at a spot because you learned that you should stand there, but then, or maybe I should go a bit forward, or maybe I should go a bit back, or maybe, you know, and because of it, you keep moving. And actually, although the place was right, the fact is that you could not contain yourself from overdoing, underdoing, walking away, whatever, you missed it. You're not seeing it.
Mm.
So there is that degree of faith necessary to, like, but again, not like so magic will happen, but more like degree of faith necessary to basically give you the strength to restrain yourself from overly defining it or just completely ignoring it and
mm-hmm.
saying it doesn't matter what I think, everything will fall into place and whatnot. So the point is to basically contain yourself within that memory. Like, so you have the right memory and now you have the pressure, the tendency to clarify it more and to attend to it even more specifically. It's like, oh no, I'll reframe that, because if I do that, I'm losing the quality of this memory, the clarity of it. So what if I just protect it? Oh, then I just start drifting away. Okay, so let me bring it back now, because the mind is getting a bit too loose. So then you bring it back. Then you pick it up. Sure, pick up the memory. But now if you want to go tighter with it, well, then you don't do that. So it's learning how to stay on the right level. And for that, you need to learn what the right level would be. And then just keep doing it.
Mm.
But the fact that you start from a position of craving means that, I mean, it's inevitable that it has to be uncomfortable to start with. To see it.
Yeah. And that's what I mean, like, it will feel like incomplete, insufficient from all the views that you have, and like craving to like complete it, fulfill it, get that nirvana, get that freedom, get that right view. And that's where you're getting it. Because you're acting out of your own preconceived notion affected by craving and assumption as to what is the measure of right or wrong, what is the measure of beneficial and unbeneficial.
Yeah, so you have to be willing to put aside whatever
you don't even have to deal with it, just include it. So you have, say, like I say, like, okay, recollect your body here and now, your whatever position you're in. Okay, you know what your position is. See, that's already a right memory of the currently enduring body that's sort of necessary base for this situation. And now I have a tendency to like grip it further. There's this pressure that wants to make you attend to it even more specifically. Oh, that is a thing now that's within the experience of body being here seated. So instead of doing it and forgetting about that body being here as a seated sort of basis for your experience, you just include that experience as another movement within the body there that's seated, that's remained unmoved. In that sense, unchanged in that broader context. You haven't stood up. So it's unchanged. Oh. So for as long as I don't stand up, I have a reference point. Exactly. Yeah. So even if you lapse, you remember it and it's unchanged. And it's been enduring. So it is, oh, so I don't even have to constantly remember it. I just need to not, when the choice to stand up or do something presents itself, I just need to see that, there is a choice. If I don't act out of it, container remains unchanged, even if I don't think about it.
Seems to me that even that that moment of like, oh, I forgot that I was sitting, you know, I spent 30 minutes thinking,
yeah.
Even having that thought sort of implies that you already know.
Yeah,
and you're
and
like,
see, even if you forgot, exactly. So you forgot and spent half an hour thinking about it, and it's like, oh, but the body is still seated. Nothing has changed. Thus, my mindfulness has remained uninterrupted. What would interrupt that mindfulness, even if you remain seated, is if the thoughts you had for half an hour were thoughts fueled with lust, aversion, that would interrupt you. But that was a choice you made. That was a choice you then kept perpetuating. So if that's your kind of, as I said before, that's like the point you keep your eye on, not like, what thoughts are here every second? You're seated, you know that, you have a memory of it. Let the mind think while you're seated. And even if you lapse, so to speak, for as long as that lapsing, for as long as that forgetfulness was not infected by lust, aversion, doubt, hindrances, your mindfulness has remained uninterrupted. In other words, your forgetfulness was something you were mindful of. The reference has contained it rightly. And I think I said that in some early videos from Sri Lanka, like, learn how to forget mindfully. In other words, when you're forgetting, it does not automatically go into lust, aversion, delusion, because you kept an eye on those three characteristics and avoid them intentionally. Because you can't accidentally start thinking about the lustful thoughts and perpetuate them. They might present themselves, but you will be taking them up and then engaging with them further.
Yes,
and that is what interrupts.
Hmm.
So if you don't go in that direction, even if you spend 6 hours of just thoughts, thinking and pondering, doesn't matter. If everything else, your situation remains unchanged and you don't go in the domain of lust, aversion, distraction, hindrances, your mindfulness is unremitting. And that's why it's effortless as well, because it's not you putting it forward constantly, I'm mindful, I'm mindful. No, the reference is the body enduring there. So all you need to do is just touch base with it every now and then, so to speak. Everything else is contained with it. Like, you know you have fenced your property thoroughly. There cannot be lust, aversion, delusion, finding way in. You have confidence in it. Now, you let the cows graze and you stop seeing them. They go behind the tree, go behind the stack of hay, go down the valley. It's still within the barn, within the fenced off area, like a seated position. So it doesn't matter if you don't see them. You know that you will see them when they come up. But for that, to develop that confidence, that's that diligence in regard to greed, aversion, delusion, choices of greed, aversion, delusion, not, oh, I had an image of, lustful image, I must get it. No. You had it. What did you do when you had it? Well, I was scared because you were affected by it, you want to get rid of it? That's overdoing it. Oh, really welcoming it, thinking about it, giving it a bit more, I'll let it have a bit longer, then I'll deal with it. No, you shouldn't have done that even for a millisecond longer. So work your way on that level, well, yeah, the fence will be established. And then you can let the cows graze and thoughts think whatever they want to think. Mind think whatever it wants to think. Because that was never a problem.